who tell us we ain't gonna win, man? Really? He's a bozo. A bozo. Really?
Yeah, we did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on a 10. Now we on top, top once again. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I had to tighten the plan. Yeah, I got it right in the end. Now we on top, top once again.
I think we're ready. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode. This is going to be episode 7 of Game Day Gridiron. I hope everybody's enjoying right now. And we're going to get into a very, very jam-packed episode for y'all. And over the past couple of days, or should I say the past week, there's been chaos right now. In the entire NFL, I mean, you got so many stories and free agency. The draft is around, you know, a month or two away. There's a lot of, like, you know, decisions being made within the front offices in multiple organizations. Some people that are improving their rosters, some people that are, you know, decreasing their roster and values. I'm not pointing to anybody in particular, a.k.a. the Bengals. But, yeah, it's going to be a great episode. I hope you guys do enjoy. Right before we do start, I do want to say we just uploaded an episode real quick. I think it's the last YouTube video that I just posted. But make sure to check that one out. It's a collaboration with Lou Sangare. I'm sorry if I butchered his name, but that's my boy. And we just made an episode right now with Club Basketball versus RIT. It's a very good episode. I got behind-the-scenes actions about, you know, what's going on in that episode. So watch that, but also watch Lou's episode, too, that has the full game and full breakdown for you guys. And honestly, let's get started. So, NFL free agency has been insane. Like I said, everything has just been going to chaos recently. So much so that I don't even think I could get to everything within this short video. Which sounds kind of crazy, but that's just the truth. I mean, there's so much that happened. So many new, you know, records set in the market. Especially when you talk about certain players that were deciding to get traded to a different team, or players that had maybe a breakout season this year or didn't have a breakout season, and maybe you don't know what their determined value is. So there's a lot of that going on. So obviously we know somebody by the name of Davante Adams. If you guys don't know Davante, he split his time this season amongst both the Raiders and the Jets. And obviously, we knew this offseason that he's going to be obviously heading on his way out the door. This was not unexpected. This was a known thing that was going to happen. And obviously, with the Jets moving on from Aaron Rodgers, you know, you got to let go of Davante Adams. We're clearly in a mode that's set between both rebuilding but also recuperating the assets that they did lose. So with that being said, they did, I think they traded Davante Adams to the Los Angeles Rams for a 2-year deal worth $46 million. Around $23 million of it is fully guaranteed money. And I think this man is the perfect replacement to Cooper Kupp. Obviously, we know he's going to get traded sometime in the near future. It could be today, it could be tomorrow, it could be in the next week, but somewhere in the middle, he's going to get traded. And this is the perfect, you know, reset right here. I mean, he brings a good offense to the outside wide receiver position. You can put him anywhere on the field. I mean, he gets to link up with a veteran quarterback that's very good, and in my opinion right now is better than Aaron Rodgers and Matthew Stafford, although he's in his twilight years, as we do know. He's going to retire very, very soon. But still, you get a very good receiver in Davante Adams, has great, you know, leadership, too, to Puka Nacua as well, who obviously is on a very, very more cheaper contract than Cooper Kupp and is the reason why Cooper is on his way out. But he is a perfect complementary, you know, piece for him. You know what I mean? And even if he doesn't pan out in his first year, which I think is highly unlikely, it's not like you gave up a lot to, you know, get this man. It's not like a Deshaun Watson trade. You paid him 2 years for $46 million, 23 is guaranteed. If it doesn't work out after the first year, then, you know, whatever. You know, scrap it, you know, cut him, whatever, after the dead cap hit. But I think this is going to be a great, great situation for him to really succeed in his final last push for, you know, a Super Bowl in his entire career. As at the end of his contract, he's going to be around 34 years old-ish. So this is going to be a very, very good opportunity for him and the Rams going forward after they do eventually will trade Cooper Kupp. Now, next man on the list is Joe Fooney. He's not really known because he's an offensive lineman, especially for a guard. It's not going to be highlighted by the media, but he recently got traded to the Bears for, I believe, a fourth-round pick. That is an absolute steal, especially if you're a Bears fan. I know he's very old. He's around 32 years old, maybe 33-ish. But this is the same man. You guys got to remember, this is the same man that blocked for Tom Brady. He blocked for Mahomes. And now he's going to be able to block for Caleb Williams. I mean, if you block for those two legends, two of the greatest players to ever play the sport, then obviously you must be pretty good at what you do and your job. So I think this is a perfect A-plus trade, especially for the Chicago Bears. For the Kansas City Chiefs, it's just a trade that's just like you had to burn some cap some way because Patrick Mahomes' dead cap hit is very, very, you know, credible. And in order to create a contending team for this season or somewhat contending, you need to let go of some value pieces that you didn't really have before. So expect the Chiefs, especially for this season, to have a very, very down season. I wouldn't deny it. I mean, there were in many one-score games in the first place. But going back to the trade, it's a great trade for the Bears. They get somebody to finally protect, you know, Caleb Williams on the inside because I believe he was one of the most sacked QBs in the entire NFL. Hell, not even just the entire NFL. I think in NFL history, it was that bad. Obviously, like, you know, there were times where he made bad decisions. Like, he held onto the ball too long. And as an NFL QB, you need to know that. And you need to adjust from that. But I definitely feel like he has a bunch of potential to succeed if the Chicago Bears are willing to put up, a good offensive line for him, which I feel like they're going to address with this pick, especially maybe trade, maybe another trade they do for another key offensive lineman, or they are able to add pieces through the draft, which you have plenty of, you know, pieces in the NFL draft, Will Campbell being one of the best they could get. But they definitely have room for much, much improvement. And I could very much see this trade being a catapult to what they need, especially with a new regime coming in and them not having Matt Eberflus as their offensive, genius of a head coach. I don't know whoever said that, but, you know, Twitter people. But moving on to the next trade that is so insane, it's that DK Metcalf recently just got traded. He got traded from the Seattle Seahawks to, you guessed it, the Pittsburgh Steelers. I bet I got a bunch of Pittsburgh Steelers fans out there, man. But DK Metcalf, I'm sorry, I butchered his name. He got traded to the Steelers. I'm trying to get the contemporary picks and what he got. He signed a 5-year deal worth $150 million. If $120 million of it could be potentially guaranteed money, it's a great trade for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He got traded for a second-round pick in 2025, so now the Steelers have their second-round pick to eventually maybe go after another, you know, wide receiver in the draft, maybe a quarterback, you don't know. But he also signed a five-year deal, $150 million, and this is A-plus for the Steelers. You get a wide receiver that's just about going to enter his prime. And I don't know if y'all seen DK Metcalf, like, close up, man. This man is huge. 6'4". He ran a 4.3 40-yard dash. He is insane at the bench. I mean, I know I'm bringing numbers from his NFL draft, but, like, it reflects to what he is on the field. If you're going to tackle this man, then it's going to be a whole job to be able to take him down. He is a game-changer in this offense. He could be another contemporary wide receiver besides George Pickens on my entire offense. And I feel like it's going to be a very, very good offense for whoever the, you know, quarterback eventually is going to be, whether it's going to be Russell Wilson or whether it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be a very, very good pick and a very good, you know, wide receiver that's going to be playing on the Pittsburgh Steelers for years to come, especially. So I give this an A-plus for the Steelers. Obviously, for the Seattle Seahawks, I mean, you had to move on from him. I mean, obviously, they're in a full-scale rebuild at this point. Jaxon Smith-Njigba obviously had a better season than him. He pulled in around 1,000 86 yards with around 7 touchdowns. DK Metcalf had sub 900, so it's obvious that, you know, you're going to move on from him. You didn't think he was worth, you know, $30 million a year, but for the Steelers, this is amazing. You get a wide receiver one, a potential wide receiver one, depends on him or George Pickens, but you got the 1-2 punch. It's no longer you could double team one of them, and, you know, I feel like this is going to be a whole new dimension to the Seattle, or not, I'm sorry, the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. And speaking of Pittsburgh Steelers, if you guys didn't know, Justin Fields just announced his decision on what he's going to do this free agency. And it's not what you guys would think. So, according to some of the sources that I was able to get, Justin Fields, who previously played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, is going to now be playing for the New York Jets on a 2-year deal worth $40 million, which means he's going to have $30 million fully guaranteed money, and he's going to be going to the Jets. That's insane, y'all. I did not see this coming. I don't know if anybody saw this coming, really. I mean, my guess was that Justin Fields was going to get signed by either the Seattle Seahawks or the Pittsburgh Steelers, depending on what they wanted to do. And I was not expecting this, that he was going to go to the Jets. I think the Jets were planning on getting somebody else, maybe, you know, I'm thinking of quarterbacks that are coming in free agency. I guess Sam Darnold, but at the same time, I don't know if he really wanted to join. But this was very unexpected. Obviously, we know the Jets are moving on from Aaron Rodgers this offseason. But at the same time, they're able to get a young quarterback. I mean, he's on a very cheap deal. He's on a $20 million per year deal. That puts him outside of the top 20 quarterbacks for highest paid in the entire NFL. And now you're able to build on other aspects of your team. And now you can play that dual threat position or dual threat type of offense that both Breece Hall and Justin Fields are accustomed to playing. And that can make their offense very, very potent. Obviously, you got rid of Devontae Adams. Much of your team is, you know, bleak right now, especially at the wide receiver positions. Obviously, he has his good buddy from Ohio State, Garrett Wilson, is still there. But Alan Lazard is looking to seek a trade. Much of their offense needs to be, you know, redone. Parts of their offensive line could be tooled, you know, as well. Hopefully Olu Fashanu takes a leap in his next year, but we're going to see with that. But I definitely, you know, grade this an A-plus for the Jets. I mean, even if Justin Fields doesn't turn into the quarterback that you want him to be, it's not like you paid so much or such an egregious of a price that it's going to affect your entire team as a whole. This is very, very good, and he's definitely going to be, I feel like, a game changer for the offense, especially on the ground as well, as he uses his legs a lot, especially with that, you know, read option type style of, you know, offense they're going to have. But mainly, I feel like also the Jets, we're going to be depending on their defense. Respectfully, you're not going to be a team that's going to be able to score 30 points a game. I feel like more of like you guys are more like a 20-point per game type of team, with your defense being able to carry you guys hopefully to a winning record, hopefully to the playoffs. But with the Jets, you just honestly never know, to be honest with them. So this is a good trade though for the Jets. Obviously for the Pittsburgh Steelers, this changes your minds on who you're going to get this offseason. Dominoes have changed. You can't get Justin Fields anymore. And the next guy, they can't even get as well. Sam Darnold. Yeah, Sam Darnold, who had his breakout season last year for the Minnesota Vikings, he recently just agreed on a contract extension with the Seattle Seahawks in order to replace Geno Smith. So according to NFL.com, Sam Darnold just signed a recent three-year, $100.5 million contract with the Minnesota Vikings. That's putting him basically outside of the top 15 quarterbacks in the entire NFL. That is a very, very good deal, especially for a guy like Sam Darnold. We were really testing the waters on what his true value was. Because, yeah, he had one good season where he looked very, very good. Obviously, the ending of the season wasn't what he really particularly wanted or what we really wanted to see. But he's on a very cheap deal. He's on a $33 million per year deal. And he's going to be able to, you know, have a number one wide receiver, obviously, in Jackson Smith and Jigba. Hopefully they get a wide receiver like maybe Luford Burden or Trey Harris or somebody like that in the NFL draft. But at the same time, this is a great trade for the Seahawks. You get a guy for the future. I mean, you didn't pay that much to really get him as well. So it's not like it's going to, you know, bite you in the bullet, you know, for signing this man. And it's a very great trade. I have nothing to say about it, especially with Geno Smith getting traded to the Las Vegas Raiders to reunite with his former head coach, Pete Carroll. But this is a great replacement and successor to him. Obviously, you wish DK would have stayed, but, you know, that's the way life goes. And we're going to see what, you know, Sam Darnold truly has in him. We're going to really see, honestly, too, if it was really just the receivers that made Sam Darnold good. Was it really Justin Jefferson, you know, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, all those guys that made him really good? Or does he really have that dog in it? You know, dogging him if he is put in a good situation, which at the same time with the Seahawks, I feel like he's in a very, very good situation currently right now with the team. So that is a very, very good trade or signing for the Seahawks right now. But also, speaking of that, there is a problem right now, a problem especially with the Bengals. Now, as you guys know, this is a very, very crucial offseason for the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, we all know what the problem was this season. It wasn't their offense. I mean, their offense was arguably the best in the entire NFL, but the problem was their defense was also arguably the worst in the NFL. So you had the best offense, worst defense. That's a recipe for, you know, failure. They went 9-8 still, which is impressive in its own right. They almost made the playoffs. But obviously, we all know this offseason they should be focused on defense. Problem is, they're not thinking the same way. They're thinking of, hey, let's franchise tag T. Higgins for the second year in a row and see if it will all work out. I mean, many people think that's disrespectful, especially in its own right. I mean, you tag a player for a second year, it's almost like you're giving that player up for hostage right now. I mean, his mom, especially T. Higgins' mom, said that this is disrespectful as hell. Chad Ochocinco said, what the hell are the Bengals doing? You know, you're keeping your player hostage like that for the second straight year. It's not looking good right now. And especially with the recent contracts we're about to get to in a second, they can't even re-sign Trey Hendrickson no more because they waited so long to try and pay him that they've just recently discussed that he's seeking a trade right now. He's seeking a trade right now for his value in the market. And that right now, ladies and gentlemen, is above $40 million per year because of the next guy I'm going to talk about right here, Myles Garrett, an absolute stud as well for the Cleveland Browns. He is an absolute, you know, dog. We already know that. But the Cleveland Browns have been going in an interesting direction, especially as of recently. This is not a team that's any sort of way close to contention at all, especially with the contract that you have with Deshaun Watson. And, of course, they have the second overall pick in the NFL draft, But at the same time, you know, if you throw your quarterback in that situation, I don't think it's going to make it any better. I mean, your wide receiver one would be Jerry Jeudy. No disrespect to him. But at the same time, you know, it's not a true game changer that's going to be in your offense. But they are right now not looking very, very good for contention. And that's why around a month ago, I'd have to say a little bit less than a month ago, Myles Garrett did demand a trade from the Cleveland Browns. And it looked like he was going to get traded for a hot minute. I mean, you could have got an historic haul for Myles Garrett. This man is insane. He's had one of the, you know, most sacks over the past five seasons of any pass rusher in the entire NFL. He's a game changer to the offense. He's built as hell. And he looked like to be a game changer if any team wanted to bring him on. But that is not what the Cleveland Browns decided to do. They did not decide to trade him, actually. They decided to make this man the highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. It is absolutely egregious what they just signed this man to. $40 million per year. That is insane, y'all. To put in context, this just screwed over the entire league, the entire pass rushers, like I just talked about, Trey Hendrickson, guys like that. They are now going to expect money like that because the previous set mark of the highest paid edge rushers in the entire NFL, was just recently with Max Crosby getting paid $35.5 million per year annually, which, by the way, great for him. I mean, the second guy behind him is Nick Bosa, who is getting paid $34 million per year annually. But, man, bro, this just hurts for anybody that needs to sign a pass rusher that's pretty good in the NFL, because Myles Garrett just upped the price, man. I'm pretty sure it's a $123 million per year deal, too, for around $70 million guaranteed. And God damn, man, this just screws everybody else over. For the Cleveland Browns, I don't know why you would really do this. It's not saying that, you know, Myles Garrett is not a good player at all. It's not saying that he, you know, he's not good. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that this team is not even close to contention. I don't even blame this man for taking the contract, too. I mean, if I was getting paid $40 million per year annually, yeah, I will never win a Super Bowl in my entire life, but I don't care if I'm getting paid like that. That's why I say a lot of the times money talks, man. You know, money talks a lot, especially for a lot of people. I mean, unless you're Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes, you focus on that money and your money yourself, because there's no loyalty in this, man. There's no loyalty in, you know, fan bases and stuff like that. This is strictly a business, and players got to present themselves as a business. And right now, Myles Garrett's agent is looking like a damn genius right now. And the Cleveland Browns, I really have no idea what they're doing. I mean, obviously, this team is not close to contention. You could have gotten a historic haul, like I said, for Myles Garrett, but you guys decided to keep him instead. And he's probably not going to be worth the same amount if you decide to trade him down the line. Or even if you decide to keep him, it's not like he's going to make a difference in you guys contending or not. You guys are not going to make the playoffs, respectfully. I believe you guys went, what, you know, free and something? I don't even know. You guys were just very, very bad. It was atrocious. And this is not going to make their team significantly better. You know, it sucks to suck, but it's the truth. It just got to be said. But also, speaking of these situations and pass rushers as well, you got to look over to a guy like Micah Parsons. Obviously, nothing has been done yet, but he is right now eligible right now for a contract extension as well from the Dallas Cowboys. And this new contract from both Max Crosby and Myles Garrett just made it super, super hard for Micah Parsons to get his value right now. Because with the Dallas Cowboys, you're paying free players an excessive, an egregious amount of money right now. You're paying Dak Prescott $60 million per year, man. You're paying CeeDee Lamb around $136 million over a four-year span, which is around $34 million per year. And now you have to pay Micah Parsons top dollar money. You have to pay him $40 million per year. Respectfully, even if the Cowboys do somehow do it, you're putting like over 60 to 70% of your entire cap space into free people. That's not a recipe for success. That's not a recipe to be able to win a Super Bowl very, very soon. Like, you guys were not even close this year. I will have to give y'all this. Y'all were very, very injury prone, especially with CeeDee Lamb and, you know, Dak Prescott. But at the same time, you guys did not have the defense like y'all had in previous years. Key guys have left as well. You got an offense that's not going to be as good as before. Zach Martin just recently announced all as well. He's going to retire. So that offensive line as well just got 10 times weaker. And now you're going to have to pay Micah Parsons top dollar money. This just really screwed the rest of the NFL with pass rushers. Like I said, you know, 1,000 times before. But now if you're a guy like, you know, Micah Parsons, I wouldn't demand anything under $41 or $42 million per year. Because like I said, he's one of the best defensive linemen or best defensive players overall in the entire NFL. So, like, obviously he's going to demand top dollar money. I would as well. I mean, let's be honest here, man. I mean, that's just my opinion, though. But speaking of other NFL news for free agency, we also got some very, very key news today around Daniel Jones. Yeah, former Giants QB Daniel Jones. Obviously, we know that he wasn't a very, very particularly good quarterback for us. He went to the Minnesota Vikings for the rest of this season as well after he got traded. And right now he's able to sign a secure deal with the Colts. I'm going to try and get details right now. Rumor is he's probably going to get, paid between the $25 to $30 million range for the Colts, and he's able to be that, developmental, bridge-type quarterback that can help you guys, in your stages of rebuilding right now. He's a 9-year vet. I mean, you lose nothing from this trade in particular. And, I feel like he has a good fit with him. He has, Michael Pittman beside him. Maybe he has Jarvis Landry. I think he's with the Colts. If not, I'm sorry if I butchered that. But he has a good supporting cast. He has a good offensive lineman, especially with Quinnen Williams. I feel like this is a good trade. Obviously, we all know, Daniel Jones for some bad things, especially as a New York Giants fan. I take that to heart that he has not been the player that we really thought he was. And honestly, I still have no idea why we drafted him. But I feel like in the right situation, Daniel Jones can succeed. He can, but it needs to be in a good situation. The Giants overall just never had a very, very good situation next to them. Thus is the reason why they really were struggling, I'd have to say. But the Vikings also, they got some very, very solid news today. Even though they did lose Sam Darnold in free agency, they are able to get a new pass rusher, Jonathan Allen, which I believe is getting a three-year deal, a long-term deal. I think it's a three-year deal worth $60 million a year. I have to double-check it, but they are able to bolster up their offense significantly with Jonathan Allen. They also were able to sign I'm sorry, y'all. They were able to sign Will Fries to a 5-year deal worth $88 million, which is around $17.6 million per year annually. It makes him the sixth highest paid right guard in the entire NFL. And also, you were able to also add in Javon Hargrave, who is a former 49er, arguably one of the best players on that entire, defensive line. They were able to bolster their, pass rush from here to here just within a day. He's going to be a key contributor to the team. And I feel like, honestly, this season, the Vikings are right now looking like to fight for the division with the Detroit Lions. I would not even want to say that the Vikings are not even going to have, a better season right now with all the talent that they've been able to add. I mean, they also get a new center and Ryan Kelly. They also added Ed Ingram at the right guard as well. I mean, you got plenty of guys. You got J.J. McCarthy, depending on whether or not they sign another quarterback in free agency to maybe give him another year to develop, because obviously he went down early last season with a particular injury that sidelined him for the entire season. But I feel like the Minnesota Vikings are going to take a huge step this year. I'm putting it right now that they're going to take a massive step right now. They're not just going to be second in the division. They could be potentially first in the entire NFL, especially with Detroit losing both their offensive and defensive coordinator and some guys, key guys leaving in free agency as well on the defensive side of the football. Don't be afraid if that particularly happens, y'all. I mean, they've gotten a lot of things. And also, we got to move into the big quarterback contract of the week. Josh Allen recently just signed a new 6-year, I think $330 million extension that pays him throughout 2030 and also made him the highest paid quarterback or highest paid player overall in NFL history. Which is many, that's very, very deserving. I mean, Josh Allen was the main reason why we went this far in the playoffs as well. I mean, we went from a team that could be a bottom feeder to, a team that could be contending for a Super Bowl. I mean, you take Josh Allen out of this team, we're not going to be as good. I'm just being straight up with y'all. He was definitely the X factor on our team, and he very much deserves it. He's an MVP catalyst. He put up some of the best numbers of his career this season, so it is a very, very mutual decision that obviously he's going to get paid what he's worth under his new contract, and I still think under this new contract as well, that he's getting paid somewhat a little bit above Dak Prescott. Is he getting paid above Dak? Maybe he's a little bit more. I need to do 330 divided by 5 and or 6 in my head. But, yeah, he's getting paid very, very good for a quarterback, especially with our team. I mean, we're able to put it into other assets because we didn't reset the market technically with him. He did get paid the most out of any quarterback in NFL history, but at the same time, it's not by the amount of years. That's just the entire amount of the contract that we're just spitting out to give him. But, yeah, paying that much for a guy, you know, that we're going to be paying eventually, I feel like it's $55 million per year. I need to do 6 times 55 in my head. I think it's, yeah, it's 6 times 55. That's $55 million per year, for $330 million for the entire contract. $250 could be fully guaranteed, which puts him in around a $43 million range. But that's very, very good. That reset the entire market. And it was very, very deserving. I mean, this is not an off season where you guys are going to see a lot of quarterbacks, I feel like, change teams that are going to be like X factors. I'm not talking about like overall quarterbacks, because like in the lower tiers, you got a bunch of guys like Aaron Rodgers, you know, Russell Wilson. You had Justin Fields before Sam Darnold, but those two got sorted out. Geno Smith obviously got traded, but it's not like, you know, off season for a go-to stud at the quarterback position. So very much deserving of Josh Allen for that contract extension. Love my Bills. Still love him to death. This is an amazing contract, and this is going to pay him until he is eventually around 34 to 35 years old. So very much a W for him on that one. I'm trying to see what else we got in NFL free agency, because it did start yesterday. There was insane stuff that happened even before then, but it's very, very good. Like, I feel like we went over a lot. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo also recently, I just got from Adam Schefter, y'all, that he got signed to a one-year deal, $4 million to potentially be the backup quarterback for Matthew Stafford. He's a very good backup in case he gets injured. Like, he's been very, very injury prone over the last couple of seasons, so this is definitely worth it, especially if you're the Rams, to have a backup plan in case, you know, your starting quarterback ever does go down. They have a very, very good team, like I said earlier, with Davante Adams, so don't be scared if you ever see this team potentially going to be making a leap, especially in the future. But also, Josh Sweat recently got some huge news that he signed a $76.4 million year for the Arizona Cardinals. They've had a very, very underrated team. I feel like the Cardinals don't get talked about a lot because they didn't have necessarily a good season up to the standards, but they are able to add a good, good defensive lineman in Josh Sweat, who previously, I believe, played for the Philadelphia Eagles on this past championship-caliber team, but he brings veteran leadership to that locker room, and he automatically, I believe, is the best defensive lineman on that team, or the best defensive player on that team. It could be debatable between him and Buda Baker for such, but he is definitely a, you know, game-changer on that, too. Also, Talanoa Hufanga, I'm sorry if I said that name wrong, former 49ers safety, just signed $45 million a year per deal, or $45 million overall deal with the Denver Broncos. Brings a good leverage to that secondary. And the Denver Broncos, I definitely feel like they shocked a lot of people this offseason. They made it to the wild card game. Obviously, they lost eventually in that game. But at the same time, it's not like they had a bad season. Obviously, Bo Nix, you know he's your quarterback of the future. You know that he's your go-to guy. Sean Payton turned him and molded him into his own version of Drew Brees, basically. But he's very, very going to be, you know, utilized in that defense, especially. Especially when I think of, you know, previous players that played for the Broncos. I feel like he's going to fit in very, very well with that team as well. But there's some news with the Philadelphia Eagles. There's two news right now that I just got recently per NFL sources right now that Kenny Pickett just recently got traded to the Cleveland Browns for quarterback Dorian, I think it's Thompson, T- Thompson Robinson and a fifth round pick, which honestly, it's okay. It's whatever. Nobody's going to really talk about it because Penny Kickett was just a backup this year to Jalen Hurts. It's not really, you know, that big of a deal. Him, Dorian Thompson Robinson, as long as, you know, Jalen doesn't get injured as all, you know. But I feel like anybody could really, you know, very go out there and, you know, succeed in the type of, you know, offense that the Steelers had, or Eagles, I'm sorry, had. And the Eagles also traded C.J. Gardner-Johnson for and a sixth-round pick as well to Houston Tech in, to, for the Houston Texans in exchange for their guard, Kenyon Green, and a 2026, you know, fifth-round pick. What I think about this right now is that C.J. Gardner-Robinson, I need to see how old he is. That's the thing, because he's 27. And he's about to enter his eventual, you know, prime. But he's going to be a very, very dynamic player for the Texans as well. I feel like this just came down to one thing and one thing only, money, and how much you're going to pay the man. Because I'm going to be honest here. I don't think they would have had the money to pay C.J. Gardner-Johnson, especially after the contract that they gave Saquon, which made him the highest paid, you know, running back in NFL history. When I, you know, talked about that, it happened, I think, the night that I was going to, you know, upload this podcast or record this podcast last week. So that happened as well, but it's strictly a money thing. You know what I mean? I talked about this business just being pure business. And honestly, you get good, good, you know, players with this too. I mean, C.J. Gardner-Johnson is known to be a ball hawk, especially in coverage. He had six interceptions in 2024 and 2022 in two different stints with the Eagles. So obviously, he's a very, very good player for them on that one. The Texans recently lost their safety, Eric Murray, to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who signed a three-year, $22.5 million deal in free agency. He left, so he brings a new void to that defense that he's, you know, able to fix. I definitely feel like for the Houston Texans, this is a very, very tricky one. Not that this trade, I'm talking about their entire team as a whole, because of the fact that, one, you're not going to have Tank Dell for the entire season. Two, you don't know if you're going to sign Stephon Diggs. And Nico Collins eventually might not even, you know, be able to play for the first couple of seasons this year, too. We got to see what's happening with that. But, yeah, I feel like C.J. Stroud might still struggle. So unless you bring a certified wide receiver one, which they probably will eventually in free agency, or maybe re-sign Stephon Diggs, it's going to be very, very tough for the Texans to be able to, you know, find, you know, a rhythm on offense. Maybe they go for the NFL draft. I don't know. Maybe they do. But at the same time, you got some other holes on this team, maybe to fix within the offensive line as well, to make sure that C.J. Stroud has the protection around him to be able to succeed. Because we've seen multiple instances last year where he was sacked multiple times more than he was the season before, where he had that breakout season with the Texans. But honestly, did I cover everything? I feel like I covered very much everything in stride, y'all. I feel like all those decisions were made, all those stuff were made. Yeah, I feel like I talked about everything. Jack Matthews, also, if you guys don't know who Jack Matthews is, he's still from that Super Bowl 51 team. Yeah, that same Super Bowl team that choked 28-3 to Tom Brady, but he's a very, very good left tackle. And he's been playing for years, man. This man has been playing for practically a decade now. All right, he signed a two-year, $45 million extension. Probably going to be the last big payday he's going to have in his entire career. And also, Ronnie Stanley also got a free-year, $60 million deal to protect Lamar Jackson's blind side, as he's now going to be his now left tackle and probably arguably the best left tackle that he's going to have. So honestly, that's great for them. I'm just going to try and speed run through a lot of these right here, man, because if I went to full depth of every single free agency signing that, you know, we're going to talk about, I would be here forever. This episode is going to mainly be about free agency because so much stuff has happened that I don't even think I'm going to get to the other stuff. Maybe I'm going to get to one thing on the NBA stuff, but that's going to be pretty much it. Maybe WNBA too, but I try to keep this to under an hour. I'm not going to take, you know, all y'all's day. Trust me, I know y'all got places to be. But Greg Russo also just signed a four-year, $80 million per year deal. Going to pay him around $20 million per year. Right now, after the cut of Von Miller, he's going to be probably arguably their best defensive player. I mean, they still need to see whether or not they're going to sign DeMar Hamlin or not. Not saying that he's the best player, but Greg Russo, I feel like, is the best player now that we have on our defense, arguably. And it's crucial that we keep him. Also, Terrell Bernard gets signed to a 4-year, $50 million per year contract. He is a crucial breakout season that he had for the Bills as well, a very great coverage guy, a guy that you could potentially send for the middle and get through that A-gap as well. And Khalil Shakir signed a 4-year, $60 million per year as well, extension with the Bills. Very, very crucial of a signing, I will say so myself. Let me see if I can get through this. J.C. Horn just signed a 4-year, $100 million per year contract with the Carolina Panthers, which now I believe makes him the highest paid cornerback in NFL history. I feel like he just surpassed Patrick Surtain's record right now. I need to find the highest paying cornerbacks in NFL history, but I do believe that makes him the highest paid right now. I think it is J.C. Horn. Previously it was trying to remember Patrick Surtain, which, by the way, he had a breakout year, y'all. I don't know if y'all saw, but defensive player of the year, well earned. First defensive, you know, cornerback to win the most, you know, valuable defender award since, I believe, Stephon Gilmore. I think it was Stephon Gilmore. But that's very, very crucial for them. They get their game-changing cornerback done. I feel like he's one of the only bright spots, especially on this entire team, with the absence of Brian Burns, especially. I'm trying to see what else. For the Bengals, they did get Mike Gesicki back on a 3-year, $25 million per year. What else are we going to look for here? Solomon Thomas, I believe, signed with the Dallas Cowboys on the D-line for a 2-year, $80 million per year contract. He's able to be that key D tackle for them, a guy that could, you know, get the run up the middle in case they do inside zone or something like that. And also, I was talking about wide receivers before, but I didn't even see this fact. Christian Kirk just got traded to the Jaguars, too, just suddenly. I had no idea about that one right there. But obviously, they needed a wide receiver because their wide receiver Tank Dell is gone for the remainder of next season. We know right now with his, you know, knee being busted in different ways that I couldn't even imagine. But, I mean, you get a wide receiver right here. Obviously, he was an overpay at the time that you got him. But you're trading a sixth-round pick for him, which means you're not paying that much to get him. Obviously, he's not the player that I believe he's worth still at the same time. But at the same time, compared to the market that they have for wide receivers right now, this is a very, very good contract, especially for them right now, in the immediate future, at least. I'm trying to see what else we got here, but I'm pretty sure I went over all of it. Khalil Mack re-signed on a 1-year, $18 million per year deal. Najee Harris got re-signed with the Steelers, 5.25, or they Najee Harris went to the Chargers. I had no idea about this, y'all. I'm sorry. I'm looking at the NFL website, but I had no idea that he was going to leave. But I guess it was not meant to be. I guess it wasn't meant to be, y'all. But this makes sense. They needed a running back that they could depend on that's also cheap. $5 million, especially for a running back, that's kind of a steal, especially for at his position. He's no Saquon Barkley. Let me make that right goddamn now. But he is a difference maker, I believe, in that offense, especially. Also, the New England Patriots have been spending this offseason. A record shows that they spent over $250 million this entire offseason. $250 million. And all of it basically has been going to the defense. They signed Milton Williams for a 4-year, $104 million deal. Carlton Davis for a 3-year, $60 million per year deal. Harold Landry, 3 years, $43 million. Kyrus Tonga, 1 year, 2.7 prove it deal. That's just a very, very cheap deal. They've been paying a lot of defense. And I bet you right now they're going to be replacing a lot of their guys through free agency, especially right now. Or maybe they're going to go through the draft, maybe, because they don't have a lot, I believe, to spend right now for the rest of their team in terms of what they're able to get right now. outside of the draft. But also, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers re-signed Chris Godwin's for year $66 million per year. A very, very good deal. And I just hate that Hassan Reddick also did not turn out good for the Jets. He signed right now with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I believe he sat out most of, if not all of, last season for the Jets. He clearly just did not want to play for us. And it turned out to be one of the worst trades we made recently, besides, you know, trading for Aaron Rodgers or Devontae Adams, whatever you want to call it. But it's also been not so good, you know, of a deal. But also, Deebo Samuel, I forgot to go about this. He recently just went from the 49ers to the Washington Commanders. He's not going to be wide receiver one there either. I mean, Brandon Ayuk was wide receiver one in, you know, 49ers territory as of recently. And now he's able to be wide receiver two behind another good quarterback, or another good wide receiver, I'm sorry, and Terry McLaurin, who's obviously wide receiver one, who showed all of y'all, by the way, why he's wide receiver one this past season. The first season he had a good quarterback under center. But you got a new dimension. You could do that, you know, play action pass with him probably coming out of the slot. Maybe you do a jet sweep motion or jet sweep pass to the left, right, you know, whatever he's good at, going horizontally up to vertically. He's very, very crucial in that scenario. And also, they just got Laremy Tunsil, who from the Texans via trade, one of the best left tackles in the entire league. They just acquired him in a blockbuster trade. They're clearly saying, hey, we're going all in on Jaden Daniels right now. We're going all in on this entire Commanders team. We made it to the NFC Championship game. This is our time to load up on all the assets. Because the only thing standing in their way, I believe, of going to the Super Bowl next season is the Philadelphia Eagles. And how do you defeat the Philadelphia Eagles? Creating an offensive line that can protect your quarterback's blind side. Because we all saw in the Super Bowl what happened versus the Chiefs, of what happens when your defensive line and your offensive line, or like what happens when a good defensive line meets a subpar offensive line. And it was just an embarrassment. You guys obviously saw Mahomes had arguably the worst game of his entire career, and you can't blame the guy too. I mean, you can't really blame him, but at the same time, this is a great, you know, trade, because you didn't give up much to get Laremy Tunsil in the first place. I mean, you're giving up a fourth round pick two with him and a third round pick, and honestly, you're getting, for the Texans, you're getting a good asset for him, especially. I mean, you're getting a seventh round pick, a second round pick in 2026, and then a fourth round pick in 2026 as well. You get a Pro Bowler. I mean, he's 30 years old. I mean, he has two more seasons left on his $42.6 million contract that made him the third highest paid offensive tackle in the entire league. Very, very crucial for the Washington Commanders, especially going forward. They also signed guys like Zach Ertz, you know, to a one-year deal worth $6.25 million. Also re-signed Bobby Wagner on a one-year $9.5 million per year deal. These are very, very crucial. They also signed Javon Kinlaw as well, I believe, from the New York – is it the New York Jets? Yeah, you're from the New York Jets. He was very, very crucial in that defensive line group, a nice guy that came in and subbed for Quinnen Williams when he needed a breather break or something like that. But right now, y'all, those are all the key free agents we have so far. Probably by the time y'all see this, there's going to be something else crucial happening. Probably is. If not, I guess I'll leave it here. Maybe I put something here in case there's something. If you guys don't see something, maybe I just look stupid and just pointed at nothing. But I bet you something's going to happen within the next day or two of me editing this that just breaks the entire internet. So we're going to see. Maybe we'll see who Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson signs with next up. But speaking of everything, guys, we got to go over the Dallas Mavericks right now and how they're looking right now, because right now, as of recently, it's looking very, very bad. The trade overall for Luka Doncic. And I know I've said a thousand single times on previous podcasts that this is an egregious contract. Not only is it an egregious contract, it's an egregious, you know, decision that the Dallas Mavericks made to trade their star, their supposed star of the league, for basically peanuts on the dollar. it was embarrassing, to say the least. If I had to be a Dallas Mavericks fan, this is a generational mistake. The 2024 Dallas Mavericks looks like the chosen team. They beat the guys like the Minnesota Timberwolves. They beat guys before. They were capable of beating people like the Denver Nuggets, potentially. They just ran into an absolute juggernaut in the, you know, Boston Celtics. But eventually, if you were a smart team in this instance that just made it to the NBA Finals but just lost the NBA Finals at the same time, the logical thing to do would be not to do anything that's too drastic and keep this continuity of this team going so that you guys could make a push the following year. The hardest thing is not getting there the first time. It's to get there back. And in order to do that, you would have to recuperate everything, which is what the Dallas Mavericks did when they signed different guys like Klay Thompson in free agency. But not the Dallas Mavericks. Not Dallas. They made every single drastic change you could even think of out of the entire 14 championship roster that you had last season for the Dallas Mavericks. Only two of them remain right now on the entire team that are active, that are not traded, that are not injured. It is not a winning formula, but you messed around and found out. And now there's people outside of the Dallas Mavericks stadium saying, sell the team. Nico Harrison looks like an idiot, which right now he does look like an idiot. And it was the most shocking and inexcusable transaction we will ever see in NFL history for so many reasons. And it somehow turned out to be worse than we initially thought. It started out, like I said, Anthony Davis being injured indefinitely. But then also Kyrie Irving getting injured besides that with an ACL tear. And we're about to get into why that was bad in the first place to start off with anything. It was literally 25 minutes into AD's entire Mavericks career, and we already knew it was over. Since the Luka trade, they have lost guys like Dante Exum, Caleb Martin, Kai Jones, Derek Lively, Derek Meadows, Jaden Hardy, and obviously as of recently, Kyrie Irving. 5 years ago, or if not 5 years ago, I'm talking about 5 weeks ago, they traded their entire future in Luka Doncic to claim to want to win now. And even then, in a matter of 5 weeks, it has changed so vitally that you have both of your stars claimed to probably make you guys further or traded your continuity for a future now into a tale that you guys can't even do that in the first place. They had your chosen one. You had your superstar, and you traded him for peanuts on the dollar. Like I said, they lost their entire team. I said before, of the 14 players they had on their team, only two remain that are active on the roster right now. If you even looked at the practice shoots or the guys shooting around pregame, the Dallas Mavericks only had seven people in total right now that were playing for them, compared to the other team's 14 to 15 players. That is the most shocking and concerning part of their entire team. 70% of their entire rotation is gone. And to carry the load, they don't even have a superstar. They don't have Luka anymore to be able to carry the load for them anymore. This wave of injuries was just so much of a bad luck and sheer luck that it does not even feel real. The superstitions of a Dallas Maverick fan and how much they feel right now for the team. They are throwing the entire franchise under the bag. They called him fat. They called him lazy. They called him overweight. They called him a bad cultural fit and defender that will not have a positive effect going forward in the NBA, which we obviously know is not true and obviously know it is just bad. It looks like a retribution of just failure and failure, and I'm just feeling for all the Dallas Mavericks fan. Of the entire Mavericks entire team, the 2024 roster that played 18,000 total minutes in the entire NBA, You want to know how much remained? 1,987. 1,987. Only 10% that remained from the 2024 roster are active right now in the NBA. And I'm sorry, y'all. I'm getting all this information from GMEX High Roller. Go check him out. He has the full video on this, too. I'm just going deep brief into what he's basically saying. But it is so atrocious, so bad, that you'll have to consider time or not for the rest of the season. If it's even worth having the rest of your roster come back, like Anthony Davis or anything like that. You are right now sitting at the 10th in the Western Conference right now. And the Phoenix Suns look like they're catching up to you. It's only a matter of time before they start catching up because you were having Kyrie Irving out there the entire game. I mean, seriously, you got to check up on Dallas Mavericks, man. This is a critical consolidation. The only thing that made sense for this trade happening in the first place is that your team would be in title contention as soon as right now. That was the only thing. You traded your future for winning right now. And in a matter of just 5 weeks, it all changed. And right now, the Luka-led Lakers looks like superstars right now. I get this from GMEX High Roller. Right now, before the trade, the Lakers had a 13th ranked net rating, a plus 0.6. Meanwhile, the Dallas Mavericks had a 10th net rating of 2.1 before the trade, which means the Dallas Mavericks before the trade, before they traded Luka, had an arguably better offense and defense than the Lakers. You want to know how much has changed since then, since his first game with the Lakers? They are now 7th. The Lakers are now 7th in net rating at 6.4. Meanwhile, the Mavericks are at the bottom of the lead at negative 0.8.2 since the trade even occurred, meaning that their defense actually got worse with Luka Doncic out of the lineup. Obviously, I know because Anthony Davis hasn't been on the floor. Obviously, I know a lot of their guys are injured. But at the same time, this doesn't excuse absolutely anything to be one of the worst in the entire league. They single-handedly made the entire Lakers organization a juggernaut. If you look at even the point differential per game, LA is still at the top of the league, nearing almost 120-point differential in total. And you want to know how much the Dallas Mavericks have had? You want to know? Negative 1.25 in point differential. It has been so bad that the governor in the front office has taken zero accountability into shading one of their superstars that they've had and they promised that they would keep for the entirety of their people's career. Obviously, ever since the Luka trade and ever since AD went down with injury, Kyrie Irving has had to step up and played some of the best basketball in his entire career. Since the AD injury, he's averaging around 36-4. On over 60% shooting from the entire field. He has been going off and having a career year, and obviously, to be able to do it, he's been playing the most minutes, around 39 minutes per game. It's not because he wants to, it's because they absolutely need to. In the games that Kyrie Irving has not played since the Luka trade, they are 1-5 without Kyrie Irving. They're 5-5 with Kyrie Irving, with a point differential. Without him, negative 1-1-2. Which makes the next statement I'm about to be saying right now. He recently tore his ACL. Obviously, he's done, but he's done for the rest of the year. And there's not even telling that he's going to be able to be on the court for the start of next season. And there's talk about him not even being the same player as he used to be because obviously we all know the ACL is critical in helping people accelerate and be as fast as they usually are. And then he's lasting minutes. Obviously we know ACL injuries have been better throughout throughout modern history so far. But this is literally the worst case scenario as a Dallas Mavericks fan. What you sacrifice for now is gone. The entire starting lineup does not even look as the same anymore. And Nico Harrison still to this day says that it is a good trade for them. And to remain lagger about the long-term issues but worry about the win now. But in all respect, no disrespect at all, this is looking so bad. I don't talk about trades that are usually this bad. I saw Deshaun Watson. I saw Russell Wilson in the NFL. I've seen guys like KG and stuff like that. Yeah, those were bad. Like to the Nets, that was a bad trade. I'll give it that. But this has been very bad. This has been another level of irony, and people are trading. You don't trade your best player, swapping him for an injury-prone player and a guy that's known to be injured as well in Kyrie, and expect them to make a deep playoff push. And now you guys have no future. And now you guys have no way to win in the short term. And even if you guys do come back, here's to say that your team is still not going to be the same team as it was before, because that trade simply destroyed your team. How a team made it to the NBA Finals and made it to such a great fall off that they traded around, 50% of their roster. They traded their best player, and over 70% of your roster from that same season is not even on the team except two players. It is just unbelievably unjoyous to the loyalty and dedication that these Dallas Mavericks fans have. And you know what Nico Harrison and that Dallas organization decided to reward y'all through all this pain and suffering and loyalty that you guys have been having to the team? By upping ticket prices by over 8%. I'm gonna leave it on that, y'all. It's very bad. Want to know my opinion? It's bad. See the rest of the Jimmy Horland video if you guys want to see. It's been bad. It's been bad, to say the least. Other ways, I'm gonna go on to another thing. LeBron James also recently confronted Stephen A. Smith regarding, Bronny's play. And I got nothing to really say about this. It was just, like Stephen A. said, it was a father confronting him, not a player. Because, honestly, I don't even blame him. I would do the same for my son if he was getting attacked on television all the time. It wouldn't bother me, but also, it wouldn't bother, just me if he, said some criticism about me. But, if that's my son, I'm going to do everything in my damn power to, stop, whatever his commentator is going to say about him. That's bad. So I don't even blame the guy. But that's all I got to say about that. But also, there's some news surrounding the Knicks. And it's about Tom Thibodeau. Basically, he's been overworking his players. Straight up. He's been overworking the guys that he has had in his entire starting lineup. And it's been inevitable in the time that he's been a, coach, even past the New York Jets. New York Knicks. I mean, you look at his previous coaching stigs, that he's always been known to overplay his players, especially with the Chicago Bulls, which honestly many people criticize him for the downfall of Derrick Rose and what happened to his career, but I digress. It might even start to happen right now. I mean, Jalen Brunson had to fight through many, many injuries, for this past season. Karl-Anthony Towns, at the end of one game, looked like he was practically limping to the goddamn bench because he looked that tired or looked that hurt or injured. He needs to learn to at least put the bench in for a relatively good amount of time. I'd say around 8 minutes, 7 minutes. Something not that's so big, but at the same time, don't play your players over 38, 39 minutes a game. Like I talked before, about the Dallas Mavericks. Not about AD, he only played about 25 minutes. Bad luck happens. But Kyrie was playing the most minutes out of anybody else in the entire NBA, and look what happened to him. You do not want that to happen to any of your players this season, especially not Jalen Brunson. I'm sorry, I'm speaking a lot too much. But especially not Jalen Brunson, especially not Karl-Anthony Towns, especially not Mikal Bridges, all those guys that you need come playoff time that will be crucial in case you guys want to make a push for a potential NBA championship. Also, third, Zion Williamson has been a star, top five in the entire NBA, and we were talking about this guy being too fat, too lazy, whatever, same stigma as Luka Doncic, but this man has obviously turned his weight down. He's obviously been that game wrecker, that guy that gets to the paint and is unguardable practically one-on-one that we saw at Duke in his early days before he originally came to the New Orleans Pelicans. But he's been that game changer. He's literally, has been a top seven player in the entire NBA. Top eight, maybe. I would even make a push that he's top five. That's just how good he has been. And honestly, if they're able to keep that up, and if they get into the bidding war of potentially drafting Cooper Flagg, or maybe a top player like Ace Bailey, I believe, out of Rutgers, the two Rutgers guys. I need to go see what they are. But even if you get a top free pick at most, this team could be really set for the future if they spend really well in free agency as too. I mean, the way Zion has been playing, I mean, if you bring a good number two to him, not just C.J. McCollum, respectfully, but you bring a good, you know, number two to him, he could be very, very good. This guy, this offense could be very catastrophic, you know, and the defense has some work to be said, but I definitely believe that there's a lot of potential on this New Orleans Pelicans team that we did not see before. We definitely really could see a lot of improvement from that. And finally, last thing I'm going to talk about, WNBA. I got to say this statement right first. There's not been a bunch of action that I've wanted to really cover as of recently. It hasn't really been on my agenda to really address those type of things right now. But it has been kind of, how do I say this, concerning with how many people have been disrespecting Caitlin Clark and her name and image. You know, from guys that are old, you know, from Diana Taurasi, I need to see the other. I think it's Cheryl Swoops back in the day. Those are all people that have been dissing her. Even, you know, Angel Reese, you know, she's an amazing player. I feel like she's an amazing center, one of the best centers in the WNBA. No disrespect to her at all. But all these people are dissing Caitlin Clark. I mean, it's just, I don't think it's a good image. I don't know why you would technically do that. It's not like I'm saying that hasn't been happening in the NBA as well. We've seen guys like Draymond Green diss on the, you know, future generation right now. But it has been so bad, y'all, because she's obviously the one that brought back the lights on, you know, women's basketball. She's the one that's making that, you know, WNBA right now. This league has never been profitable, right? It's never been profitable. The NBA always makes a loss every year on the league. It's a one-sport league that doesn't make any money but gets all this money invested to just because the NBA is good. It's just how it is. But I just don't know why you're not appealing to this superstar. It's like a comparison like this, y'all. I'll just say this right now. Let me just think real quick. It's like DeJounte Murray. He's a good player. He's probably even a great player. Even Trae Young, he's a good player, even great player. Same with, you know, maybe Jalen Brunson or Karl Anthony Towns. Those are great players, but they're not superstars. Like the LeBron James-level superstars or Steph Curry-level superstars and all the storylines we see in the NBA. We see all those there. We don't see that in the WNBA until this season. I mean, Caitlin Clark versus, you know, Angel Reese could be the next coming of Bird versus Magic, basically like that. Or maybe Peyton versus Manning, if you want to cross first that with the NFL or whatever. But it could be a rivalry that's historic. That could bring, you know, more vision to the game. But I just feel like the old players are not going to let that go. Like, you know, all these other people, Breonna Stewart, guys like Deanna Suarcy, Cheryl Swoops, people like that, they're just disrespecting on a player that, you know, arguably has every right to be the face of the WNBA. With what she did at Iowa and what she's able to do in her rookie season, people are single-handedly watching this game because of how good she is. And just disrespecting a player, especially like that, or hating on a player that could potentially lead the next generation of women's athletes is just insane. I mean, they want to always criticize her for her potentially slapping. I want to remember her name, or almost hitting a player because she's like wanted to swat away the ball, you know, something like that. And then also getting dissed from Team USA and not, you know, getting in there despite, you know, finishing fourth in MVP. And like I said, players like Angel Reese disrespecting on her still to this day. I mean, this league, like I said, has never been profitable whatsoever. It does not make revenue. And with this information that I was just recently told, it is making me so shocked to hear this, that WNBA players are apparently depending on whether or not they're going to opt out of the collective bargaining agreement that they have signed with the WNBA, which makes them available to be in 2K games, to be able to be on cards or, you know, WNBA merchandise and stuff like that. They're depending on opting out of that and potentially not even playing for the 2024-2025 season, which could lead to a catastrophic event. This has happened various other times in history. This has happened with the NFL during a lockout because they were in a lockout, right? And then the NBA as well, when the league didn't give them the funds that they thought they deserved, even though the league was increasingly popular and they were making a lot of money. But like I said before, this league does not make any money. It doesn't. I'm sorry. And it's not saying nothing to disrespect the women that are there, but I just feel like it's so bad to the point where it just had to be addressed. I mean, this, they could find a new legend in the game, a new person that could single-handedly make everybody, you know, more richer, that could make this league much more popular than it was. And this league just recently had its all-time best season. Like, it had an all-time best final season, all-time best overall season. Viewership was up before any time ever before. Like I said, it still doesn't make any money, but it's still on a right path right now. But I feel like people that are hating on her right now, that are hating on Caitlin Clark, especially right now, just apparently they have a reason. But I feel like they have no reason whatsoever that are still hating on Caitlin Clark. It could lead to the downfall of the WNBA as we know it. But let me get, I mean, at the same time, I don't know, y'all. This is just me. I'm just a guy that likes sports, you know what I mean? But with all that being said, y'all, thank y'all so much for watching the video. Let me know what your thoughts are down below in the comments. Let me know what y'all think in the podcast section. I'm CJ. You guys have been watching Game Day Gridiron, and I'll catch y'all on the next one. Peace out. This could be the end of the WNBA, as we know it. I'm in the day, I'm doing 30 on 30 and up. You in the what? You in the way. Either you rollin' or rollin' the dust. You with us or what? Keep it running. We did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on a 10. Now we on top, top, yeah. Once again. Yeah. I had to tighten the plan. I got it right in the end. Now we on top, top, once again. We did a lot for the wins. Came in a drop on a 10. Now we on top, top, once again. Yeah. I had to tighten the plan. I got it right in the end. Now we on 10, 10, 10.